This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 93 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut. David Vanderhoof is off this episode. He's still recovering from his recent surgery. David really wanted to come back this episode, and he almost did, but it's just too early, and that's fine. David will be back. And between you and me, if you want to send him a get well message, write him at david@theuavdigest.com. Okay, coming up, we have some interesting announcements from AUVSI's just-concluded Unmanned Systems 2015 conference. Tim Trott from Southern Helicam attended the conference, and he sent us an interview with Jay Wilmot, founder and president of Nexutech, an unmanned technology consultancy. Also, we have an interview with Vince Donahue, the founder and president of Vortex UAS. The full version of the conversation appeared in Airplane Geeks episode 347, and here we bring you a condensed version. So with that, let's get started. The Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, AUVSI, held its Unmanned Systems 2015 conference in Atlanta, Georgia, May 4th through 7th. Now, a number of interesting things came out of this conference. One was the FAA announcement of the Pathfinder program, which it called, quote, a partnership with industry to explore the next steps in unmanned aircraft operations beyond the type of operations the agency proposed in the draft small unmanned aircraft systems rule it published in February. That's the NPRM that we've been talking about for months and months, it seems. At the conference, FAA Administrator Michael Huerta gave a speech, and in that speech he said, quote, we're partnering with three leading U.S. companies who have committed extensive resources to perform research that will help us determine if and how we can safely expand unmanned aircraft operations in the United States. These companies reached out to the FAA to work with us on exploring three key types of unmanned operations, unquote. So the FAA is working with three industry partners in three different focus areas. The first one is visual line of sight operations in urban areas, and CNN is the partner for that one. CNN will look at how UAS might be safely used for news gathering in populated areas. The second focus area is in conjunction with Precision Hawk. This is extended visual line of sight operations in rural areas. And this involves UAS flights outside the pilot's direct vision. Precision Hawk is the partner here, and they will explore how this might allow a greater UAS use for things like crop monitoring in precision agriculture operations. And then the third focus area that Huerta mentioned was beyond visual line of sight in rural and isolated areas. The partner here is BNSF Railroad, and they will explore command and control challenges of using UAS to inspect rail system infrastructure. The key element of this is that it goes beyond the sort of the first round of rulemaking that's evidenced by the proposals in the NPRM. Huerta said, we anticipate receiving valuable data from each of these trials that could result in FAA-approved operations in the next few years. They will also give insight into how unmanned aircraft can be used to transform the way certain industries do business, whether that means making sure trains run on time, checking on the health of crops, or reporting on a natural disaster. So again, we're seeing the FAA taking the long-term view and setting in place steps that achieve those long-term objectives. Huerta did comment on the NPRM. He said the FAA received more than 4,000 public comments on the proposal. I think it's actually closer to 4,500. But Huerta says we're working to address them before finalizing the rule. This, however, takes time, so we're actively looking for other ways to expand the use of unmanned aircraft in the meantime. We're receiving valuable information from our 6 national test sites. We're also accommodating requests for some commercial operations. The Pathfinder program, he says, is our latest step in the right direction, and I'm eager to see the results. So clearly, with so many public comments to go through, it's going to take the FAA an extended period of time to get through all of them because they're obligated to. And we've worried in the past that this might mean that it could be several years before the rules are in place. And in the meantime, it's very difficult to make forward progress. So I think what we're seeing here is the FAA, as they kind of churn through the NPRM process and get us to some rules, some actual regulations for commercial use of small UAS, that the FAA is trying to do other things in parallel that kind of get us down the road. And these are all areas that really require a lot of development, a lot of research, a lot of study, because we just don't have all the technologies we need in order to ensure safe operation in a commercial context. Now, in Farm Industry News, there's an article we see, Precision Hawk to work with FAA on UAV extended line of sight safety. And there's a little more information about the scope of this. It says Precision Hawk is going to formulate a framework for both fixed-wing and multi-rotor UAVs for missions in areas such as agriculture and forestry and other rural industries. And also interesting that Precision Hawk will test its Lattice traffic management system. We've talked about Lattice in the past, LATAS, that's Low Altitude Tracking and Avoidance System. Farm Industry News says testing will include on-aircraft transponders as well as Lattice traffic management ground-based hardware and software. And then on CNN, we see a piece in Flight Global, a new tethered UAV for CNN. CNN announced at the conference that they will become the launch customer for the Drone Aviation Corp UAV called the Watt, W-A-T-T. This is a tethered drone that can take power from the tether and simultaneously transmit data back down the tether to the ground. This is an electric quad rotor. They say it can hover at 150 feet for 8 hours. Not sure what the limitation is on 8 hours if it can be electrically fed up through the tether, but that's what it says in this article. Yeah, you can see how a tethered drone, I mean, that could be perfectly acceptable for a news gathering kind of mission, at least one where the action is static and not moving around very much. So it may be a safe approach to using a drone in an area where it may be heavily populated, or you know, where safety could be an issue should there be some kind of a problem with the drone. So that's some of the news from the AUVSI conference. We'll have more coming up, and we expect to bring that to you in the upcoming episodes of the UAV Digest. At the conference, Tim Trott from Southern Helicam caught up with Jay Wilmot. He's the founder and president of Nexutech. They're an unmanned technology consultancy. So let's listen to Tim and Jay.
I'm Tim Trott. I'm at the 2015 AUVSI show. I'm standing next to Jay Wilmot of Nexutech. And Jay, you've been to a couple of these shows. How does this one compare to the last one you saw?
Well, Tim, this is my 29th. And I've seen a lot of changes over the years. Just from year to year, though, last year we saw a lot of quadcopters. This year we have many more quadcopters and variations on the theme. But I'm also seeing a lot of apps and software kind of value-added stuff to deliver a product to an end user. There's a market diminishment of the amount of air superiority gray in this hall.
You're referring to military?
A lot less military. It almost looks more like the Toledo or LA RC show. There's a lot of good RC stuff here.
Actually, I saw AMA is here as well.
Yeah, I did. I saw Bob Brown, president of AMA here. I told him I thought that it was great that they were here. I applauded their advocacy work. Of course, the AVSI, as you know, is a strong advocate for unmanned systems, and it's good that they're getting together. I would like to see AOPA and some of the other organizations that are concerned about national airspace issues here create a more of a dialogue, but this is always a great show.
Seeing a lot of states promoting themselves here, Maryland, I thought I saw Ohio.
All of the test sites that were selected, the six test sites back in early 2014, are represented here. We, Nexitech, are actively supporting the efforts in Virginia under the Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership test site. And, of course, there are states represented here that did not receive a test site who also have a lot of fine things going on. I know in particular we support some work going on in Florida, North Carolina, and elsewhere.
Talk a little bit more about who you are working with in Florida.
Well, the Gulf Unmanned Systems Center in Gussie, down in Apalachicola, has a test range. And what's nice about what they've got going is a mix of terrestrial and sea environments for testing a mix of unmanned systems, not only unmanned aviation, but of course, AVSI represents all the domains of unmanned systems, air, ground, underwater, surface vessels. So Gussie's got a great capability there. And I know that our Nexitech associates have been active in Florida to help get good legislation passed, rather than some of the more prohibitive legislation that we've seen elsewhere, like in Virginia.
How big do you think it's going to be next year?
Oh, it'll be even bigger next year. It'll be interesting to see what flavor it takes. I expect next year we will see more of the companies who have been granted 333s and some of the service kinds of capabilities that are being offered. And it'll be not people selling hardware, specifically systems, but probably people marketing services on a broader scale. We do see some services here. This year we see the law firms, for instance, who assist with filing 333s, with usual engineering services here. But I expect next year will be more of a unmanned system services delivered to end users represented here.
Let's talk about some of the specific variety that we're seeing at this show. We're talking about AMA and some of the... there's actually a Black Hawk helicopter here.
Yes, of course, you brought a full-size helicopter. Of course, you know, you can unman anything that's manned. And I personally think it's easier to unman some of the larger platforms because they don't have the same concerns for payload and hardware constraints, as they've got more room. But that was quite a surprise to go around the corner and see that system there. Another thing I'm seeing is some novel technologies, some of the tilt wing, tilt multi propulsion system. NASA's got one here that has, I think, 8 or 10 propulsion units on a fixed-wing aircraft for vertical takeoff and landing and then transition to horizontal flight. We've seen a couple of those things emerge here this year.
One of the things I was curious about is we've heard about Japan getting a jump on us and using helicopters and UAVs, unmanned helicopters, for agricultural use. But you had a comment on the one that you saw here, and what was that?
Well, I think the small helicopter is ideally suited for small fields, and what works in a small environment doesn't necessarily scale to a large environment. Here in America, we have vast farms and fields that need to be surveyed and have fertilizer, pesticide applied to them, and that begs for a much larger system on the scale of what Sikorsky brought. So, Yamaha is a company that brought their RMAX here. That's been around for 20-some years, and it's been successful in Japan on the fields that they have there, and it certainly had a lot of experimentation here in the U.S. with some of the universities. Georgia Tech right here in Atlanta, for instance, that I know, and Carter McMillan up in Pennsylvania have experimented with the RMAX as a means of evaluating operating systems. and I'm sure there are roles that, that aircraft of that size will fulfill for precision agriculture, for the application side. You know, we have a very strong ag aviation industry in this country. It's called crop dusting. And unfortunately, we lose a pilot in that business about every 3 weeks. So there's a compelling reason why we should have unmanned systems doing crop dusting. But I think it's going to have to be on the scale of the aircraft that we're already using, manned-sized systems, if not larger.
But in other venues, there are more applications in ag besides just crop dusting. It goes beyond that into crop surveying and mapping, and we've seen some things with infrared photography and things like that.
Yes, the sensor availability for the smaller aircraft is better than it's ever been. The multi-band sensors are there, and not only that, but the processing means to be able to geo-rectify and analyze that information so that the farmer is handed a product that says, here's where there's an issue. This is where you need to focus your attention. So the earlier that we can intercede with things like infestations or other crop issues, irrigation, the sooner we can do that, the less of an impact it will have on the treatment process.
What are the obstacles to agriculture?
Well, the biggest obstacle for all of us remains FAA and the timeline for getting integrated into the National Airspace System.
I was specifically talking about beyond visual line of sight.
Well, that, you know, we've got some technological hurdles that we need to challenge to solve. The detect, see, and avoid is a responsibility for everybody that's in the National Airspace System. And, you know, I think that the members of this industry have done a great job of introducing new technologies specific to the collision avoidance. For instance, the downscaled transponders that are now available. They have the cigarette pack size transponders that would not exist for the smaller unmanned aircraft systems were it not for the need to operate and communicate to the air traffic control system. So I think we will, as an industry, will continue to lead aviation in new detect, see, and avoid capabilities. And you know what? Those will transition to the manned aircraft community and make flight in general safer for all of us.
I'm Tim Trout at the 2015 AUVSI show. I've been talking with Jay Wilmot of Nexutech. And back to Max.
All right, moving on now. In episode 347 of the Airplane Geeks podcast, we spoke with Vince Donahue. He's the founder and president of Vortex UAS. Now, Vortex produces tailored solutions for businesses utilizing UAS, including pilot training, consulting, and other services. Vince is a pilot himself, and Airplane Geeks is more focused on manned flight than unmanned flight, so our conversation tended to lean more towards the perspectives of commercial and private pilots. So this wasn't a bunch of droners complaining about the inability to fly FPV for commercial missions. It's just a conversation among pilots of manned aircraft. Vince has a foot in both camps, so his views were informative. What we're going to play now is a cut-down version of the interview. You can hear the full 30-minute conversation at airplanegeeks.com/347. And apologies to those of you who also listen to Airplane Geeks. Maybe consider this a refresher, or if you got it the first time, you can bail out now, and no offense will be taken. Okay, to start off, we asked Vince to talk about safety and where things stand now.
The power is there. Everybody recognizes the power of this technology, but how do you do this safely? Now, I'm a professional pilot. My wife is a professional pilot. We all fly in commercial airlines. We don't want an unmanned aircraft to hit, or a commercial airline to hit a drone, an unmanned aircraft, and take it down and somebody get hurt, or a lot of people get hurt. Let's face it. You know, you talk about it won't be an efficient and timely integration of unmanned systems at that point if that happens. We don't want that. So we can't let that happen. And I'm looking at this from the FAA's perspective now, and I always wasn't that way. I was more of the, hey, come on, let's get a move on. And there is that cry in the community as well, because it has taken a tremendously long time in evolving this. But where we are now, so the Section 333 exemptions is a way to operate in the airspace right now. And Vortex UAS has applied for an exemption, and we're waiting to hear back, and maybe we'll receive it any day. And how they implement these their exemptions are yet to be seen, because it hasn't really this is all new. This is really brand new as of November that these 99 companies have received their exemptions, and there's maybe 10 or 20 that come out every other week.
Vince believes strongly that all of us as stakeholders should read the NPRM and understand the message the FAA is sending.
Now, the other factor is the NPRM, the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, that the FAA has put out. And that document, I would encourage everyone who is interested in this and to see how the FAA sees this whole legal regulatory structure evolving. They should really look at that document, and you can project how the FAA sees this evolving.
Vince talks next about what drone pilots, or operators as the FAA wants to call them, what they need to operate commercially, and we have to consider what insurance companies will need.
Now, key to this is operators. What will operators need? Right now, you need a pilot's license. So whether that's recreational pilot, sport pilot, private pilot, and up, commercial pilot, ATP, that's what you need to fly, because you need to be certificated in order to operate in the national airspace, in order to participate in commerce. And because you're flying commercially, you're participating in commerce. So Vortex UAS is focused on working within the structure that the FAA is providing us. And also, what a lot of people aren't talking about is, how is insurance going to drive these costs and these requirements for unmanned pilots? What are their requirements going to be? So we are also working with insurance companies and soliciting them. Hey, what do you want to see? How do you want us to develop these programs? Because the threefold mission of Vortex UAS, one is pilot training. And that is a what we see is a booming need in this community, because let's face it, not a lot of people have even a recreational or a sport pilot's license. So we have a lot of manufacturers, a lot of exemption holders, but not a lot of people who can legally fly. So Vortex UAS is training those pilots.
Next, we asked Vince if companies have to wait for an exemption to get started.
No, I mean, you can do classwork. You can certainly do classwork. And that's what we're doing. We have an overview, a four-hour seminar on the fundamentals of what it takes and what the current situation is in the unmanned industry. And we go into the history of unmanned systems. We go into where the FAA is at right now, a lot of what we touched on just a few minutes ago. We talk about what are some other things that are really important about the unmanned system. So that's what we're doing. And we're growing that into a full 3-day course where we can take a pilot and bring them to a place where they're actually hireable by a company that has a 333 exemption. So that's where Vortex is right now.
We asked Airplane Geeks co-host Rob Mark what his concerns are as a pilot. Now, Rob, by the way, was an air traffic controller in a past life. He also flew for a regional. He's a certified flight instructor, and he's no stranger to flying business jets. Now, here's what Rob said worries him about drones.
Seriously, the only thing that worries me is that right now the technology does not exist in order to keep drones away from airplanes and away from airports. And again, simply assuming that people are going to do it because they understand the rules does not, you know, that I'm afraid that's not enough to make me feel better.
So that's what a pilot says. Rob actually said quite a bit more, but that's the gist of it. Now, here's how Vince, also a pilot, responded.
Now, I think, Rob, your concerns are valid, and I share those concerns too. You know, we went into how being pilots and being passengers on commercial airlines, we don't want anything to happen. Of course, you know, jets, manned aircraft, we have TCAS. So we have that alert system that we can use to avoid other aircraft. Loss of control of UAVs is a primary concern for the FAA, and they state that in the NPRM. That needs to be addressed, some kind of sense and avoid, and that is, that's the key in the industry. That's the buzz phrase in the industry, because as pilots, the fundamental separation, really, when push comes to shove, it's see and avoid. You see another aircraft, whether you're on an IFR flight plan or just flying around VFR, you see that aircraft and you avoid it. That is your fundamental responsibility as a pilot. Well, how do you do that as an unmanned aircraft operator? You can't see it. Well, that's why the visual line of sight requirement is what the FAA wants to implement, at least in this first round of rulemaking process. So that's one part of it. Another part of it is the automation of some kind of sense and avoid system. And there are, I can think of one system right now that has a burgeoning, some kind of sense and avoid system that they're implementing. And I don't know too much about it, so I don't want to talk about it. But that technology is being built and is really necessary for this technology to really mature and come of age. We have to be assured that those collisions are not going to happen. So I honestly share those concerns. People are working to solve those issues. And when that's going to be, who knows? Could be next week, could be 10 years from now. Don't know.
We went on to talk about some other issues, including the FAA phased approach. And both pilots, Rob and Max Trescott, characterized sense and avoid as hope and pray. But we eventually came around to talking about an industry in its infancy and how the opportunities are plentiful.
Right. You're on the ground floor. This industry, it's in its infancy. And for, you know, I would recommend to young people who are having trouble in the job market, look, this is an industry that's going to explode in the near future. And it's starting to explode already. And there aren't even rules that we can, you know, everybody and anybody can fly and get into this business in a service operational way. So if you have any interest in unmanned aviation whatsoever, now's the time. I mean, jump at it, because there are amazing, amazing opportunities. And you don't have to go out and get a graduate degree like I did. It just happened to be the way I approached it. But you do need some training and some skills, and to at least be able to speak the language, you know, because it is, as every industry has its own language, unmanned aviation has its own language. And to be able to speak about it intelligently and understand what people are talking about, the jargon and whatnot, and, you know, NPRM and Section 333 and all this stuff that we throw out like it's nothing, to be able to understand that, you really need the tools, the foundation, to be able to approach someone approach a company who is hiring. And trust me, there are companies that are getting these exemptions. They need pilots, and Vortex is going to provide those pilots.
All right. Again, you can listen to the entire interview in Airplane Geeks episode 347. Find that at airplanegeeks.com/347. And you can find Vortex UAS at vortexuas.com. We have two videos of the week. The first comes from Bill. This is Surf the World's Most Extraordinary Waves with Drone Videos. Bill writes, here's some exciting footage shot by a drone in Hawaii at one of the big wave spots. The article is interesting in that it points out that the surfing community welcomes the UAVs and the footage they get, somewhat different from much of the reception that UAVs get in other circles. Bill writes, also of note, the drone appears to be sharing the airspace with helicopters. not sure how they deconflict each other and see and avoid, but the potential for a collision is very real in this setting. I don't want to know what happens when you fly a UAV into a tail rotor. Yeah, me either. The video here is really fantastic. These are some really large waves, and they're captured really effectively in this video, so thanks to Bill for that. Also, this was shot by photographer Eric Sturman with a GoPro on a Phantom 2. This was during 2 days at the Jaws surf break in the North Shore of Maui. The second video, it actually also comes from Bill. This is Good Morning San Diego. And Bill says, great eye candy view of my town, includes an SR-71 and the Carrier Midway. The description for this video says all the scenes were captured around sunrise over a period of 4 months. Shot entirely using a GoPro Hero 3 Black Edition camera mounted on a, guess what, DJI Phantom 2 with Zenmuse 3-axis gimbal. Thanks, Bill. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the UAV Digest. You've been listening to episode 93. Find us at theuavdigest.com. If you'd like to go straight to the show notes for this episode, just go to theuavdigest.com/93. You can also follow us on all the usual social media places. Look for us on Twitter at UAV Digest and on Facebook, also as UAV Digest. If you'd like to send us an email, the address is feedback@theuavdigest.com. If you'd like to send an email to me, it's max@theuavdigest.com. Or if you'd like to send something to David directly, it's david@theuavdigest.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. You can also find us on Stitcher.com. We also have some swag. There's a link to that on our webpage. Also, if you would like to support us monetarily, we have a Patreon account set up. It's very easy to make a small donation or even a recurring donation. Look for that on the website as well. So with that, I'll just say this is Max in Hartford, and thanks for listening.